It's a real pleasure to welcome onto the show Dennis Le Corrier. Hello, great
How
to speak
you?
With you. I'm very well, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm in the middle of a tour. It's going to go on till July, so I'm taking deep breaths. A lot of work coming up.
Yes, getting ready for it, but you're well used to it, which we'll talk about in just a moment, because we'll talk about your great body of work and, of course, the upcoming tour. But I hope you don't mind me saying at the outset here, you have a very beautiful surname.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, if anybody could say it, it's an Italian name. And if you said it in Italian, it would be Le Corriere, and it means the courier or the messenger. Everybody told me when I was younger, oh, if you're going to be in show business, you really ought to shorten it. And I thought, nah, let's give them a challenge, you know. They only had the words hook to remember for the longest time. Let them work on Le Corriere
exactly.
for a little while.
Exactly, make your fans work for it.
A little bit. You know, and no matter how the people pronounce it, I think it's me. I turn around.
Yes.
I'm used to hearing it all sorts of ways.
Absolutely. I mean, well, with that in mind, I mean, it's quite a big question, but if asked what messages do your songs convey on the whole, what would you say?
You know, I think the songs convey lots of different messages. I think today, these days, being on the road, what I would like my audience to perceive from me is that I'm not just there to recapture the old days, that it's not a nostalgia act particularly, that, you know, there'll be a little of that, you know, because for me, my old fans have been so great and they've stayed with me for so long that I want to give them new things. I want them to know I'm still thinking, you know, to come up with new things rather than just playing, you know, a steady diet of only the old songs and, you know, thinking, okay, they like me in a red shirt, I'll just buy 25 red shirts and not think about this anymore. So my message these days, pretty much, if I have one when I play, is we're all here now. We're still all here now. Isn't that great? You know, I hate my message to be, you know, wasn't it wonderful in 1976?
Yes, exactly. Remembering the classics, but also bringing it, you know, bang up to date as well.
Oh, yeah. No, because, I mean, that's the point of it, really. You know, and like I said to you a few minutes ago, if somebody thought of me as a nostalgia act, it would really worry me. But an artist with a history is okay. That's exactly what I hope I am. You know, I've been doing it a long time, still doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we'll move on because you've got a new album coming out. We'll move on to that in just a moment. But on the Arts and Entertainment show that I have here, I like to hear all about stories and talk about authors and writers. But as a singer-songwriter, you really are a storyteller. I mean, how do you start your work? Do you start with the lyrics or the melody?
Mostly words. I mostly write down words. It's always harder to come up with the melody later because you want them to fit the words exactly. But I love words, and I think in scan, and I think in rhythm, and it's nice to tell a little bit of a story. I mean, you know, my last album, one that came out last year, Post Cool, it was autobiographical to some degree, but I don't think it was that to the exclusion of everybody. Because if you tell a good story, sing a good song, that means something to you, hopefully. Someone else is thinking, wow, me too, that's exactly how I felt, I wasn't sure how to say it, you know. So if you perform any service at all when you write a story, tell a story or a song, it's being able to say something that a lot of people wish they would have said.
Yes,
you know?
It's a universal message, isn't it, that sort of a lot of people feel, because there's certainly a lot of longing in your lyrics and unrequited love, a sense of wanting to lose something. You know, you might lose, like, you're in love with a beautiful woman and alone,
right?
Again, sort of a spectrum of human emotions. I mean, how quickly did those songs form in your mind?
When I was with Hook, we sang early in the early days. I did a lot of songs written by one fella, a guy named Shel Silverstein, and he wrote Sylvia's Mother and Ballad of Lucy Jordan and Carry Me Carry. And as a young guy, he gave me great things to say, not only melodies to sing, but great things to say, stories to convey. And so I started real early concentrating on that, and I always appreciated that. You know, later in life, when Hook started recording songs that were undoubtedly big hits, like Sexy Eyes and stuff like that, they were great radio records, but we lost that thread of, for me as a singer, singing something that you really mean, that you can really sink your teeth in. Because, I mean, let's face it, I've never met a girl on a dance floor in my life, you know, so.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, you must have got a legion of female fans after Sexy Eyes and Love You a Little Bit More. It does evoke beautiful images. But with Sylvia's mother, obviously it's a story going on there. And was Sylvia's mother based on anyone close to you and the Hook collaboration?
Well, I didn't write that one. Shel Silverstein wrote it, but it was a true story. I mean, he told us before he even sang us the song, he told us that this was a woman he used to know, and this was a song he wrote about her. And years later, just a few years ago, I actually got to meet Sylvia. Some people knew her through channels, and she was in London, and we had lunch, and it was the most amazing, weird thing to be sitting there speaking to a person that I'd been singing about for 30 years. You know, it was legendary. It was like singing about, you know, it was like sitting there having lunch with the Loch Ness Monster or something, you know. Something I'd only heard about and told stories about, but here she was, you know.
She's a legend. So, yeah, she was alive.
That was a true story brought forward.
Fantastic. Is that when you read a novel and you actually then sort of like see the actual person and very different images going on in your mind?
Matter of fact, if it's a novel and then they cast it as a film, sometimes if it's not the people you saw in your head,
it's very different.
It kind of ruins it a little bit for you, because you think, oh, that's not what I thought he looked like.
I know. I mean, talking of films and the sense of drama in the songs, I guess it shouldn't have been a surprise to hear that you starred, I believe, in a film with Dustin Hoffman. Do you enjoy all things cinematic?
I enjoy all things challenging, I think. I like when something comes up that somebody seems to be thinking about me a little out of the box, you know, something that perhaps is close to what I did before, but not exactly. That's why when any of the acting came up, that film, the play I did that Shell wrote in New York City, it was a challenge, and it was nice to throw yourself out there. I called them the let's flap them and see if we fly gigs, you know, because you just don't know. And you think, okay, I think I'm going to be able to handle this, but we'll see. And that's always the daunting thing, because you find out whether you can or not in front of an audience.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. They'll be very truthful.
But I'll tell you what, the audience really helps you get through it, because, I mean, if I sit here on my sofa with a guitar and go over a song, I think, okay, that sounds all right, but I really don't know what I have until I sing it to people.
Yes,
then I know exactly what, you know, how what I'm saying and how it's coming across.
Exactly, how it's being received,
yeah,
isn't it?
Sure.
I mean, it's a really hard question to answer, but if you really had to name one of the songs that you've written for performers like Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson or Jerry Lee Lewis, would you say there's one that gave you the greatest satisfaction to write and see performed?
Well, you know, there's a song called A Couple More Years, which is the thing that Bob Dylan used in a film. And Jerry Lee Lewis cut it an album or so ago, and it's been cut by a lot of country artists. And I wrote that with Shel Silverstein. But, you know, it's one of those songs that when you listen to the lyrics, it's very worldly lyrics. And when Shel and I wrote that, I had a melody, and he was an older guy than me. He had all those lyrics. And so I think that song probably has been recorded by more people out of anything else I wrote, and I would tend to think that it's because of Shell's wonderful lyrics, you know, but that one stands up. It's always great when you get someone else to record something of yours. I mean, it's an endorsement, you know, it's a validation. That I remember Shell writing this wonderful song and playing it for me, and I said, oh, that's beautiful, Shell, and he said, do me a favor, man, and he turned his notepad around, and he handed me his guitar, and he said, sing it to me. So I kind of tried to remember the melody, and I read the lyrics, and I sang it back to him, and he went, wow, that is a good song. And I thought that was so charming that he had to hear it coming back at him before he could make that final decision.
Yes.
But sometimes that's the truth.
Absolutely. Well, you get too close to it sometimes, don't you, yourself? You need to have another person's perspective there, and
well,
obviously one he greatly admires.
I mean, there's a song, I've told this story before, but there's a song that was a big hit for Dr. Hook that I wrote called If Not You. And I wrote that song very quickly. And it seemed very simple to me. It kind of one of those ones where, you know, they say it wrote itself, because it was something I was living through, a personal experience. And after I wrote it, it probably took about 30 or 40 minutes, I thought, gee, I like this. But then my second thought was, but it's personal to me. It happened so quickly. Nobody else is really going to care about this. And so it was a little while before I even sang it to anybody. And these days, it's like one of the most enduring things I cut with Dr. Hook.
So amazing.
You really never know. And you kind of have to trust your audience. I've learned to do that, though.
Yes.
I've learned, I can't wait when I write a new song. I can't wait to get it out on a stage and see. Because my audience kind of knows me now. And they're not guessing, and so there's a little more of a, we have a little bit more of an ongoing relationship, you know.
Absolutely. There's certainly sort of, it's scattered in history, isn't it, of the songs which have actually become enduring classics, which actually write quite quickly, because you get that moment, I guess, as a singer-songwriter, a spark of inspiration, and then it just flows out of you.
Yeah, you know whose career I really admire? Taylor Swift. And the reason I do is she's a young girl. She's been writing songs since she was even younger than she is now. Her fans love her for it. Her fans love that she reports on the age she is and her life. And what a wonderful way to get into the business, because all her fans are ever going to want from her when she's 40, when she's 50, is, hey, Taylor, tell us what you're thinking. Tell us what you feel about life now. And that's such a wonderful thing for an artist to get in on. It doesn't happen a lot.
Absolutely.
It doesn't happen a lot where an artist gets in doing exactly what they are and who they are and becomes, you know, wildly successful for it. But I really admire the career she's having and that she's obviously going to have.
Yes, people really do want to know what's the thoughts behind those lyrics that you're writing, you know,
sure.
What's the story? I mean, it's going to be new material as well as, I imagine,
sure,
some original classics as well.
The show is made up of all sorts of things. You know, one of my biggest dilemmas these days before I tour is I agonize over the set list. And I tell the audience this too, that I've agonized over what I want to play for you guys, because there's songs I know you want to hear. There's songs I know you'd love to hear that you're not even thinking about yet. Dr. Hook had 12 or 13 studio albums out, and in between, you know, those dozen hits we had, there were a lot of good songs that fell by the wayside, that didn't get a lot of attention, that maybe I haven't played for years. And, you know, when I sing one of them, the audience goes, oh, I never thought I'd hear him sing that. And I like that. I want there to be surprises, you know. What I like about my audience is that they don't just expect me to show up and sing the old Hook songs.
Yes.
They go, anything new? You're going to sing us any new songs? What do you got? They're waiting for the surprises. And I want an audience that expects me to come up with the goods.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if I was the kind of artist that every year I toured and they went, oh, let's go, he's going to do the greatest hits thing. Let's go. They'd come once or twice. But because I'm surprising and willing to take a gamble and think about what I want to play, I mean, when I tour like this, there are people that, you know, I don't mean to blow my own horn, but there are people that will come back 3 and 4 times while I'm on the tour.
And you're going to be keeping it modern, fresh, up to date as only you can. And I say Post Cool is the album that's out at the moment. So
yeah, I have a book of poetry that just came out a month ago.
You do? Yes.
Yes, Whatever's Burning Now, it's called. And that's something that's a revelation to me, because it was not something I ever would have expected to happen. I'm writing things all the time. I write 2 lines, 4 lines that I really like, and you know, I in the past I always assumed, well, here's 4 lines. Now if I can come up with 32 more in a melody and I have a song I could sing to somebody. But my son, a couple of years ago, was looking at my lyrics and he said, wow, it's great stuff, Dad. And I said, yeah, I have to finish most of it. And he went, what do you mean? And I said, well, I need, and he said, no, you're thinking about these things as unfinished songs, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of it is finished poetry. And I thought, and I started thinking of it that way. And perhaps the reason I never did was because I don't particularly have a forum for poetry. I never would have went to my manager and said, hey, John, get me a poetry deal. I just wasn't thinking that way. But I started putting these little pieces on my blog, and some of them are short, 2 lines. Some of them are 8 lines. Some of them are longer than that. And people enjoyed them on the blog. And I thought, okay, I'll do that. And last year I got an email from a publishing house that said, we love your stuff, can we put it out as a collection? And so I said, yeah, great, you know, because it automatically validated it, because it wasn't me going to someone saying, I think this is poetry.
Yes.
They said to me, we love your poetry. And I went,
found you.
Okay, so it wasn't me even having to say I was a poet. They told me.
Yes, often the best organic way, isn't it, really, when things find you in that way, and it just comes out of you. You don't know where it comes from, but it just comes in a different form.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and you never know. You don't know. You know, that's the one thing about success. You don't know where it's going to come from.
Like you said, the poetry has just come from, you know, left field, if you like, but...
Right, and I don't expect, you know, I don't expect my book will light up the literary world, but, I mean, people who have read it, really
I'm enjoying
like
it.
And I like it. I mean, I'm really proud of it. When I look at it now, you know, because I put those pieces on there one at a time over a series of a couple of years. But when I look at it now, it really does say something about me. You know, I see that all these pieces as a collection really say something about a person. And that's kind of cool. You know, that's really kind of cool. And there are cartoons in the book that I draw. I draw these faces, and as soon as I draw the face and it's staring back at me, I write a caption immediately as of what I think that face would be saying, and then I leave it alone. And so there are about, oh, I don't know, a couple of dozen of those in the book, too. And, you know, it's just interesting because the things I've done my whole life that all of a sudden now make sense to someone else.
Yes, they all kind of fit in like a jigsaw puzzle, don't they? That's fascinating. Yes. Very multi-talented, the illustrating as well in the book. So if people do want to have a chance to look at the poems, is it available?
There's a website called Whatever's Burning Now. That's the title of the book. So it's called whatever'sburningnow.com. And there's a website there that there's a page where you can see some of the cartoons, and it scrolls through some of the poetry and tells you how you can get it, and it links to my website and stuff. So yeah, better than me trying to describe a cartoon over the radio.
Yes.
They can actually go see it. But you know, it's funny because if you leave the page blank, I mean, if I resigned myself 20 years ago to just say, okay, I'm in my 40s now, I had an illustrious career, let me just keep rehashing that now. It's definitely the most successful thing I will ever do, and maybe it will be. But if I would have done that, nothing else would have happened. I would have had no solo albums out. I wouldn't live in the UK. This book wouldn't have happened. I would just be out there singing songs that were popular 25 years ago. And
it's the best of the past, but it is the present, and it's going towards the future as well. So, you know, everyone's going to be in for a complete treat. You know, I can't just say you're a singer-songwriter. There's so many facets to you, but it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you. And people will enjoy our local people of Epsom Playhouse. You're coming there on Friday, the 6th of May, and then you're going to be touring. Maybe not quite as long a dates as with Hook, but you're certainly going to be having quite a number of dates.
Yeah. And the tour is called Alone Again because last year I had a band. And every once in a while, when it's a special thing, like the release of my album or something, I'll put a band together. But basically, I'm always out there by myself singing songs that I wrote. And this is back to that. I have a lovely support act, a lady named Emily McGuire, who's just got a great voice, and she's a nice person. And I thought a female voice would be a nice compliment to the evening, and she's just great. It's nice to have people that you like on the road. But basically, it's just me and my guitars, which is why it's called Alone Again. And yeah, like I said to you earlier, I like this concept of walking out there alone, you know, because if I play two songs and look down at my set list and think, I don't want to play that one, I don't. I'll play something else, something somebody shouted for. When you have a band, it's very rehearsed, and, you know, there's a lighting guy up in the booth waiting to hit the guitar player with a red follow spot while he does his solo. So everything is a little more choreographed and orchestrated, and when I'm up there alone, it's not like I don't try to do a professional show, but it's a lot more intimate and a lot more flexible.
Yes, and a lot more liberating as well, I'd imagine. If you're in a band and sometimes you think, oh, we're going to do it in exactly the same way, like you said, follow spot at that moment, gets a bit formulaic after a while, and just to have that freedom to just do what you want is going to be fantastic.
I don't tend to do what some artists do when they've been doing their old songs for a long time, which is some artists just change them so they're, you know, unrecognizable because they're so bored from singing them. But I think if people like those songs, it's because, you know, of a certain element or elements in them. And you need to retain those elements, I think. And then again, it's always the lyric. It's always the lyric. When it's just a guy with a guitar, you better have a good song. You better have a good song because that's all you got, you know. As a matter of fact, I like to sing songs where if I just recited the lyrics to you, you'd get it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It would make its point.
Yes.
And so it's been fun, and it, you know, I'm glad it's fun because to tell you the truth, the rest of the day when I'm on the road is sitting in a car on the motorway, sitting in a dressing room, sitting in a hotel, you know, 22 hours plus a day, I'm waiting to do the show.
Yes.
And so the day the show becomes not that important to me, then what is it I'm doing, riding around on the motorway looking for a good cup of tea? And it's got, like anything else, it's got ups and downs, but when it pays off, and what I mean by that is sometimes you'll be singing a song on stage and you'll really feel like you made that connection. It doesn't happen all day, all night long. There's those moments that you think, oh, that was a perfect moment. And then you might do three shows looking for that moment again, which is not to say that you won't do three great shows looking for that, you know, because you're pulling them up. If you're fishing, you're pulling the fish up, but you're waiting for that red one. It's kind of nice to have to stay in the moment. Because in my head, you know, I think far too much. I think all the time. I always do. I have a poem in my book that says that about, you know, I think too much, and I know I do, but I know what that's about because there's too many people thinking too little and somebody has to balance things out, you know. But I do. I think an awful lot. And on stage, I get to think specifically about something. And when I'm up there alone, like I said to you earlier, it's just me and the audience. And when they talk to me, I talk back to them. It keeps you in the moment. And no matter how you feel before you go on, unless you're sick or something's dreadfully wrong and you cannot focus, once you walk out there, it's very hard not to focus.
Yes.
On the people in front of you there who have paid and put on their nice clothes and expect something from you.
Yes.
And I want them to expect something from me.
Yes, you feel the connection, you feel the joy of people who are really genuinely there to see you and just adore your music. So,
And these days I get the feeling, you know, my audience these days are, and I say this to them too, is that, you know, it's people that have seen me before and the people that they dragged along with them this time, you know, saying, come on, you got to go see these guys. And when I say that to the audience, you'll be amazed how many draggies there are every night.
Yeah.
And I see those are the people I really strive to please.
Yes.
The other people, not that I take them for
converted.
Granted, but I know they like me already. You know, it's the people that go, come on, you got to go see this guy, and bring me that here all the way home. Well, he was no good. You know what I mean? I don't want to ruin anybody's friendship.
Oh. That's at the end of a relationship.
Yeah, just when people come up and say, oh, I got married to that song. And I think, oh, God, they're going to come looking for me in a couple of years telling me, you know, it didn't work.
Yeah, we got divorced afterwards.
Yeah, so I got a song for that, too. It's on my latest album. So.
Oh, brilliant. Post-cool divorce.
Yes, no, there was a divorces. Song on there called Ask Her that was written a little bit about my my last venture into marital bliss.
Oh, lovely.
Well, you know, I was married twice, and the first time didn't work out because I was never around, and the second time didn't work out because I was always around.
Oh, did quite get the balance right there.
Yes. So I'm starting to think I may be the common denominator here.
Oh, you're thinking too much.
Yes, I don't think that's going to stop either.
Oh, well, it's such a joy talking to you today.
Thank
it's been absolutely fascinating.
Thanks.
And it's going to be a brilliant tour, and I know our listeners are going to absolutely love it. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Speaking
Thanks
on
for
the
time.
Show. Brilliant.
Bye, folks.
And that was Dennis Le Corrier, and he is on tour with his latest show, and he's going to be appearing at the Epsom Playhouse on Friday, the 6th of May. Brooklyn's Radio.